Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Kristen and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Guys, welcome back. Episode 164 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell. Alongside me, Johnny Stufko.
What's up, Tristan? What's up, everybody? Episode 164. We're bringing the pain. We got a legend. Who we got, TK?
We got Randy Couture, man.
Yeah, man.
Absolute living legend. We both, you know, really look up to this guy. One of the UFC greatest ever champions.
The thing about Randy as well is that, I mean, he's in his mid-50s now, and he's continuously reinventing himself. And I remember how I felt. It was in the mid-2000s. When I first started hearing about KOTOR, and at the time I was in my early 20s. So I, you know, when you're 21, 22, we equate things to how old we are. So I saw a new guy in the UFC and I'm like, he's 33 and he's balding. This dude's a scrub. Do you know what I mean? He's usually in sports.
Make it in their 20s. You don't really wait till their 30s to make it and be big time.
And that was my ignorance as a 21-year-old. And then obviously you see that this man is one of the most dangerous men on the planet. I don't know if he was the old, was he the oldest champion?
Maybe not, because remember, because Royce Gracie and Shamrock would have been well into there.
Oh, no, no, Royce was in his mid, late 20s when he was fighting Shamrock. This was in 97, 98, but KOTOR won it like 2005, 2006.
I don't think he was the oldest ever champ, but possibly. He would have to be in the top five.
I know he wasn't in his
20s.
He would have to
be in the top five for sure.
And then you see that, and then, you know, you hear stories about, you know, his wrestling background and how.
Yeah.
He was an Olympic.
Well, alternate. He'd actually make the team, even though I think there was one year where he was ranked number one and they expected him to take the gold and he missed the team.
Yeah, and that happens quite often. I mean, we've had Severn on the show. He was a four-time alternate in the Olympics.
It's a very competitive sport.
Very competitive. And they have that thing with how they choose the Americans. It's only one per weight class, even though
they could probably possibly have 10 of the best in the world.
In one division.
Only one can go through.
And only one could go. What do you feel about that?
Well, I guess that's just the way the Olympic Games has to be kind of even across all the nations, because it is a international event.
Yeah.
So sometimes there is sports like that where the Olympic Games is not the strongest in terms of like the world championship sometimes can be.
It's not the pinnacle in certain sports.
It's just an absolute honor to win an Olympic gold medal. But yeah, you're right.
For your country.
Yeah, some of the sports.
They're not even professional.
Yeah, some of them don't even compete with the best people because only one can represent or two can represent. So
yeah, and boxing boxing just has gone through some rule changes with like the headgear, and I know the boxing up until sort of maybe still all amateur, you weren't allowed to be a pro to box.
That's strange, right?
Yeah, and that's why you have a Lomachenko, 397 amateur fights, 3 gold medals.
I'd like to see them continue to wear the headgear and things like that. There is a difference between amateur and professional. So
the headgear thing's interesting. I think it was Stitch, actually. Stitch was doing an interview, and he was talking about that new rule change and about sometimes in certain scenarios the headgear could also hurt you. Like, having the headgear on isn't necessarily a safety precaution.
From talking to a few different boxers just about the headgear, they don't actually like it. Like,
it gives them –
sometimes I hate it because it gives you too much of a sense of comfort. Like, it's a defensive mechanism because it rebounds all the punches. So sometimes you're not as alert because you can take it on the actual on the helmet instead of, you know, you're a lot more alert when you don't have anything protecting you.
Yeah.
So sometimes it can be to your disadvantage to actually wear it because you get these you start training in this environment where you have a sense of security that you're not going to have in a fight.
So it's like having – so you're not – because boxing is all – it's a reaction.
Yeah.
And it's all about in the moment – that's the best part about, in my opinion, of like picking up as a hobby to learn the movements, is because what other place in our 9-to-5 life – we'll say 9-to-5, the general pop – that when you're in sparring session with somebody that you are required to be switched on every second in that boxing sparring session? Because if you check out mentally, you're going to get clipped. Think about us, our lives. Most people, they go to work, they clock in. I think being switched on like that does something to how we react and how we express ourselves in terms of like
thinking. It can be scary, especially if you do it the full way where you're allowed to punch people in the head. Like,
yeah,
that's pretty scary.
So let's talk about KOTOR too. Have you ever seen a wrestling what a wrestling session looks like in a gym, like a gym war wrestling.
It's one of those things that, you know, you guys growing up in America, that's a big sport for you guys in high school, isn't it?
Yeah, like, it's huge.
I wish that was kind of like that in Australia, because it does teach a lot of discipline, and like even for those young guys having to cut weight when they're just in their high school years and little things like that, and the little training, and it just seems, just like BJJ is, it just seems like the maneuvers are just so, you need to be so precise, and it just takes so long to learn it all. So
yeah, USA Today just came out with an article last week about the most NFL players active from the each city. Ooh. So like we're in my hometown, Youngstown had the most. There is an NFL player for every, I think, 10,000 people.
Yeah.
So one in every 10,000 people play in the NFL from my hometown. But wrestling, back to your point, in my high school is equally as big.
Yeah.
Our wrestling program, maybe my boy Joey Simon's watching this. He was a state-ranked wrestler, and he writes for the paper in my hometown. Equally as big. And then American football started in Northeast Ohio.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right. I guess, so they don't do that in Australia?
No, they don't. But I'm really glad that the UFC actually came in, or mixed martial arts more to this point, because how many, especially just say for someone like your father or, you know, your grandfather, you know, if they were wrestlers at school, once they finish school or go to college, once college is done, they never wrestle again.
Yeah.
But now it's giving them an opportunity to actually turn it into some sort of career or continue that sport into another endeavor. So I think it's great that MMA has come about, because there's so much talent going on in the wrestling ranks that it'd be a waste that once they're 21 that it's over. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, when we were chatting with Algieri last week, I didn't realize he said something very fascinating about the difference between the MMA fighter now and the boxer, is that most MMA guys are coming into the sport with a wrestling pedigree, which means he related it to education.
Yeah.
Most wrestlers have gone to college. So you have that, even if they didn't graduate with a degree, you have that education matrix. Boxers, you're boxing to escape a life. You know what I'm saying? You don't get into boxing to be famous. You get into boxing to create a better opportunity for you.
It's a life-changing opportunity.
Yeah, so like the wrestling thing, you're right.
It's actually interesting between Australia and America. Like, for example, football, you just mentioned that. It's a huge sport, especially Northeast Ohio, Texas, that's two major, Florida as well. But once you finish, like, you don't really have, like, in Australia, if you don't make it in rugby league or rugby union, you can still play competitively on a local level.
Yeah.
It's like an amateur level. It's still quite competitive.
Think about your boy Curly. Like, we have friends who, this is no knock on anybody's skill set, but in Australia, guys, my friends and family are fans from America listening. It's part of the Aussie culture to, as an adult, play in adult sports leagues.
Yeah, like absolutely.
Rugby. Curly plays, shout out to
soccer,
our boy Curly.
Cricket.
Soccer, cricket, and I think he plays one more. And I was equating, like, where I come from, if you don't make it out of high school,
You don't play anymore.
You hang him up.
Yeah.
The mindset is different. The mindset is, if I wasn't good enough to get a college scholarship, I'm not going to continue the charade and delay the inevitable or even risk another injury. But now looking back, being 35, sports, man, I kind of wish we would have had that,
because it's that team bonding. It's that team bonding and friendship that you form, even though it's not on a professional level. You know what it's like when you're in high school, how tight you are with the team that you play with.
Yeah,
it's something that you're going towards a one goal. Do you know what I mean? It's something that I think as adults sometimes we lose, the fact that we can be with someone else and have similar goals and together strive to actually hit that. I think that's great.
You're right, man.
Yeah.
And I guess a lot of times people miss that.
Absolutely.
It's like Restrepo, Sebastian Younger, he's a writer, and he did this piece on the mindset of when soldiers coming back from war get depressed, not necessarily equates to they're depressed because what they've seen or what they've done. They're depressed. Depression equates to not having their guys, not being part of that unit, not having that support of what they had, even though that was a war-torn area. Pretty interesting.
Absolutely.
And, before we bring Randy on, Tristan had to take this one alone on a solo. We had to overcome some adversity, so TK stepped up and delivered. He's about to deliver some bombs at Randy. I wasn't able to make it for this one.
Yeah, it was a 4 o'clock in the morning job. You know, you're probably going to tell by the first – I was listening to it a couple of times, and that first 15 minutes is like, well – I kind of had a bit of a, I don't know about lack of energy. I was very excited for the interview still, but the kind of the second 20 compared to that first 15, waking up at 4 o'clock, that was pretty gnarly.
And you know what, guys, I do have to let you know, Tristan did invite me to sleep over his house, but we live about 30 miles away, and it just you know. And then you had to come back into the dude. Tristan Cannell was a savage. You had to come back into the city, and then we ended up interviewing
Chris
Algieri at 6 a.m. So sometimes these things happen, you know, with back in the Nagar's interview, and then we had DeMartini when you were in Vietnam, and now this. But it's all part of the process. And,
yeah.
I'm excited to hear this interview. You know, Couture was one of these guys that I looked up to a lot. So
yeah. So before we bring Rennie on the show, just a big thank you for everyone tuning in, you know, leaving us messages on social media, subscribing on iTunes, and leaving us those great 5-star reviews.
Yeah, guys, what you could do now, if you haven't already subscribed, go to iTunes, SoundCloud. It takes a few minutes. Like, share, tell your friends about the Vision Board Podcast, man. 160 plus episodes in. We're bringing it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So let's get Randy. I'm excited. Let's
bring
get
Randy on.
All right, guys, my special guest is Randy Couture. Randy is a 6-times UFC champion. He's a retired U.S. Army sergeant while also away from the cage. He's a great actor, starring in movies with guys like Sylvester Stallone, and he's also a TV personality. I welcome the man, Randy, to Couture. Randy, welcome to the show, bud.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Randy, I just saw actually on your Instagram the other day. Are you shooting a new movie with Sly again, bud?
We are looking at February, March time frame for starting filming of Expendables 4.
Wow.
So excited about that. We're still waiting on the script. I know Sly's been working diligently on the script. Obviously, he's been a little tied up. He just finished Escape Plan 2 and Creed, so no rest for the wicked, I guess. He's been knocking it out.
Yeah, he's definitely a worker. In terms of, you know, the roles that you get, you know, obviously stereo casting, because, you know, you're one of the most dangerous people in the world in terms of fighting, and I'm sure, like, action comes pretty naturally for you. But when you were at university/college, you actually studied a lot of poetry, didn't you?
I was a foreign language and literature major, so I read all the classics from Tolstoy, Dostoevsky, Cervantes. I read all that stuff in college. And I did start writing some prose while I was in college, and have continued to do that over the last, I guess, gosh, we're going on 30 years now. Not a lot of people know that about me, I guess. I've been having fun the last couple of years. I've gotten to know some musicians, and have actually sat down and written a couple of songs with some country guys, which has been fun and an interesting process. But mostly just focused on acting, trying to get better and learn more. Each and every time I go out, I feel like I learn a little bit more about that process.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, being like having all that education and that background, would you be interested in being casted or even auditioning for roles away from your normal action man type roles?
Absolutely. I definitely want the challenge. I think you were spot on. The physicality and authenticity that I bring to the action genre is how I end up getting a role like Toll Road in Expendables, with, you know, fairly limited acting experience. So I think that Sly is looking for people that bring that authenticity. You know, each and every guy that's in that film and in that cast, yeah, I think Sly's looking for that authenticity, certainly for a movie like Expendables. But I would love to do some of those things outside the box, a romantic comedy or a Western or something like that. I think you know, one of the reasons for getting involved with Dancing with the Stars or the lip sync battle was maybe to show a little bit different side of myself.
Randy, what's the biggest thing that you've learnt in terms of the business from someone like Sly Stallone? Like, I'm sure that, you know, we always talk about kind of, you know, surrounding yourself with good people, and it also helps you to rise up. Is that something similar that you found when you've been hanging around with guys like Sly Stallone?
Well, I don't think you can help but get better. at your craft, if you're hanging around guys that are the best at what they do, I mean, Sly, Schwarzenegger, Bruce Willis, Jason Statham, I mean, those guys are literally the best in the business, certainly in the action genre. So those are the guys you want to rub elbows with. You want to see how they operate, how they prepare, how they do what they do. It's the same thing true as fighting. You're only going to be as good as the guys you're working out with. So if you're the best guy in your gym, you're probably not getting challenged and you're probably not getting better.
Yeah. Is that why you had Team Quest with Dan Henderson and Matt Linden?
Well, that was certainly the start. That was an amazing crew of guys. I swear, I think we could have sold popcorn to some of those workouts. It was it was an amazing, amazing place. And that transferred over to Extreme Couture when I moved to Vegas, and had a great group of guys in there as well. So iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. I've got that tattooed on my arm. I believe that wholeheartedly.
Wow. With Team Couture, like, I know there's this different areas of the business. Like, I know there's the foundation, there's the gym. What's your vision for Couture moving forward?
Well, I think the gym is solid, and I'm excited that my son Ryan is a lot more involved in the operation of the gym. He's kind of working as the assistant manager behind Eric Nixick, my gym manager. And I think that's fantastic. That's kind of something that I saw as the future. As I retired and moved away from fighting, I saw him stepping into competing and into being involved in running that brand and that part of the brand. The clothing line, the Extreme Couture clothing, does very, very well with Affliction as our manufacturing and distribution partner. It does very well, and we're excited to have the Freedom Defender series shirts out this last year, which a portion of the proceeds from each of those shirts goes to the foundation to support wounded veterans. Obviously, that's a passion of mine, giving back to that community. The community, I think, in a lot of ways, forged me into the man that I am today. From the age of 19 to 25 years old, I was in the United States Army. So those were pretty formative years for me. I look at the world in a particular way because of that time. So it feels good to me to be able to help those guys that are putting it on the line and fighting for our freedoms and our way of life around the world. I don't know. I'm just happy to affect some of those guys. We have an MVP program every Thursday. We've got a bunch of vets that come in and train with us, and then we sit around and spend some time talking, chatting, creating a network and a support system for the guys that are transitioning from wearing the uniform to being civilians again. And that one's one that means a lot to me as well.
Yeah. You actually had such a, when you go back, I'm sure you've probably looked in hindsight now, you went straight into the US Army. When you were younger, you obviously very good wrestler and you're on the alternate team for the Olympic Games. Do you believe a little bit in fate or things were meant to be?
Yeah, I choose to think of it as your vocation. Everybody's searching for their vocation. And if you look at the root of the word, vocation is your calling, vocare, the Latin, to call. And I feel like combative sports was definitely my calling in life. I ended up on a wrestling mat, maybe for the wrong reasons, but I found my place. I found the thing that I was meant to do.
You mentioned Ryan before as well, and he's a very good fighter in his own rights. He fights in Bellator. You as a parent now, do you find it hard to watch him?
No, I'm actually happy that he's found the thing that he out. I enjoy being a part of the process for him. And I've been doing this a long time. I've never seen anybody seriously injured, so I'm not worried about him in that regard. To see him have success and do something that he loves what else could you ask for?
Yeah. How hands-on are you with his camps and things like that?
Well, the last few years have been very involved in the process with him, looking at video, coming up with game plans, figuring out the best approach for the opponent that he's facing. has been part of it. But initially, I just like when he started wrestling, I kind of stepped back and said, "Hey, look, this is a tough sport. This is your choice. You know, you're stepping into this because you want to. I'm going to keep my mouth shut and enjoy your journey. If you want me to be involved, you're going to have to ask me.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm going to stay the hell out of the way." And that certainly served us well in wrestling and then translated also to fighting when he started fighting.
Yeah. Randy, you mentioned, you know, that analysis of an opponent. You know, you were very big into watching a lot of tape with your team and analyzing their strengths and weaknesses, correct?
That's absolutely correct. I believed wholeheartedly in that as every chance I got. Something that transferred over from wrestling with the national team. You know, we scouted out opponents and the other guys in the world that we're going to have to compete against at the World Championships and the Olympic level. We want to know where those guys are strong, where they got scored on, how they won matches and how they lost matches, and try and formulate the best match you could have to put yourself in a position to win. And I think that same thing translated over to fighting. Analyzing opponents, their strengths and weaknesses, and how to put yourself in the best position to win a fight.
Yeah, I've got a great question actually from my co-host, Johnny, who couldn't join us this morning, but he wanted me to ask you, especially, it probably is a great way to segue it in now, is can you teach killer instinct?
I don't know if you can teach that. I think that's a particular mindset. I think you can make friends with, and I think we've seen some guys like that. There's a huge piece of this game that's psychological, and I don't think a lot of guys spend enough time sharpening those mental skills to go out and deal with the adversity of competition, of fighting, or football, or whatever it is. So, learning to develop the proper perspective and put yourself at ease, that fear of failing, that fear of you know, looking silly or being exposed out there is a big thing for a lot of athletes, and it can cause guys to freeze up. But I think the first thing I had to do, having been someone who was never in a lot of street fights or anything like that, was get used to getting hit. I mean, certainly wrestling is a contact sport, and I'd gotten used to those rules of engagement, you know, the head contact and all of that, but getting punched in the face was a different animal. So I had to overcome that innate fear that we all have and make friends with it, get used to it. If you get punched in the face and it makes you shy away or turn your head, then you might be in the wrong sport. That should trip your trigger and get you buttoned down and ready to go.
Yeah, Randy, you used a sports psychologist to help you in that area, didn't you?
I did. I had the luxury of being involved with a sports psychologist as part of the national team for wrestling. And so a bunch of those skills and terms and things that I learned from that experience in trying to compete at the highest level in wrestling were then things I could translate over and apply to fighting and dealing with the adversity of walking out in front of that crowd, stepping up in that cage and fighting.
Yeah, dealing with adversity, especially early on for yourself, like I mentioned at the top of the show that, you know, you were obviously a fantastic wrestler, but you missed the Olympics on several occasions. Did that kind of spur you onto the great things that you achieved later in life?
I think things turned out the way they were supposed to, you know, having some innate faith that things work out how they're supposed to. I think if I'd have won, you know, in the trials in 92, in 96 is the number one guy in my weight class and gone on and won a medal like everybody expected, I would have been content. I'd probably be a wrestling coach somewhere right now instead of foraying into mixed martial arts. And look what I would have probably missed. Well, the fact that I came up short in those circumstances left me hungry, left me motivated to continue to work and compete. And I found the sport of MMA it suited me just fine, and things worked out.
I was going to ask you how you found the sport of MMA, because you were kind of in your early 30s at that stage too.
Yeah, I was 33 when I first saw a videotape of an MMA match And obviously Don Fry was fighting on that card, and he's somebody I went to college with, so I was familiar with him and watched him compete and was immediately intrigued by the sport. And it was a year later, the next spring, that I got a chance to try it myself, literally on a whim. But, it worked out. It was something that just kind of happened.
Is that some kind of like, given that you became a superstar into your 30s and now a movie star into your 50s, is that some advice that you can pass on to everyone, that you don't have to do everything special when you're in your 20s? There's still time to set your goals high and still achieve them well into your life.
Well, I think it boils down to passion. I think in my 20s and 30s especially, I was still really focused on wrestling and achieving the things I'd set out to achieve in that. And, it didn't work out. I mean, I still had a ton of amazing experiences and, paid for my college, took me around the world, on a wrestling mat, and then kind of found fighting and had taken care of myself enough and my body held up well enough. Fortunately, as we get older, we get a little smarter. I didn't do some of the stupid stuff I did when I was younger. Mm-hmm. But, that created some longevity, and focusing in on the science of athletics and trying to take care of myself, certainly into my 30s and 40s, allowed me some longevity in fighting.
Yeah, with all the success, Randy, who was the person that kept you accountable?
I mean, in a lot of ways, it was me. I think, I have my mom is a strong figure in my life and always kind of been the foundation. She raised three of us, as a single parent. And so I would, she never missed a match. She never missed a fight. She was always there. And that's somebody you never want to disappoint. You never want to do anything that is going to create some sort of embarrassment for yourself and your family.
Mm. In terms of that mental mindset, just going back to that, Randy, another question from Johnny was, well, Johnny's American, so he actually waited on you twice at the strip house at the Planet Hollywood Casino while he was a bartender there. And he said that you were in person extremely quiet and reserved. Now, with that persona, how are you able to switch that switch on when it comes to fighting?
Well, I think that suited me well. I don't have that brash kind of outgoing personality or persona in fighting. I try to keep it simple, just be myself. I'm kind of a processor, sit back, kind of take things in. When I'm comfortable and confident or have something meaningful to say, then I'm happy to speak, but I'm also happy to kind of take in the situation and see what's going on, and I don't need to contribute if there's nothing meaningful. So I try to be respectful. Treat others how you want to be treated. It's pretty simple. It's called the Golden Rule for a reason. But that restaurant is actually awesome. I love that place. It's a great place.
Just touching on.
They got great steak and a cool environment.
Oh, I'll definitely let him know this morning. He'll be stoked that you love that place. Randy, just touching on, your fighting career again, and the relationship I wanted to touch on was with Chuck Liddell. When you fight three wars with someone, does that change the way in terms of, because I spoke to George Foreman and he spoke, obviously after the Rumble in the Jungle, him and Ali weren't friends for a number of years, but they ended up forging a great relationship because of what they experienced with each other in the lead up to the fight and then in the fight. So in terms of yourself with Chuck, have you had something similar in terms of developing a relationship outside of the octagon?
Well, I think Chuck and I always had a mutual respect for each other. I think that showed in how we approached those fights and how we competed in those fights. And certainly now that we get a chance to do some appearances together and hang out together and train in the gym on occasion together, that mutual respect is certainly alive and well. I think Chuck is—he's a great competitor and he's a good guy. I enjoy being around him, and I think that those relationships that when you sweat and bleed with somebody are some of the strongest you'll ever have.
Randy, jumping up between heavyweight and light heavyweight, that was quite a feat. In terms of when you were fighting at heavyweight and giving away such a huge advantage in terms of weight and size, what were the tactics that you were using to really, you know, offset, you know, that disadvantage?
Well, you try to avoid those situations where you're going head up, where you're going, you know, strength for strength and size for size. You try to use your advantage in mobility. Generally, is walking around at around 220 pounds, and felt like for the most part, I was more athletic than a lot of the bigger guys. So forcing them to move their feet, forcing them to keep up with me and mobility and get in situations, especially clinch situations and things like that, where I had a lot of experience. I felt like I had an advantage there. And you know, it didn't always work out that way, but for the most part, I felt pretty comfortable against those bigger guys.
Yeah. Did you intentionally choose to fight heavyweight?
Well, I didn't have a choice. Back when I started, UFC 13 was the first show that they even had a lightweight division, and lightweight was anything under 200 pounds. And I was walking around at 220 and wrestling for the national team at 213 at that time. So cutting down and trying to make 200 or under 200 to be a lightweight just didn't make sense. It made a lot more sense for me to fashion game plans and try to put myself in positions against the bigger guys to be successful.
Yeah, given how lean you were, was 20 pounds an easy cut for you?
It was never terribly difficult. I think in every given day at practice, in a good hour and a half practice, I was losing between 7 and 9 pounds of water on a daily basis. And then rehydrating after practice. So your body kind of gets used to that, you know, that purge and rehydrate situation almost every single day. So I try to stay within 10 or 12 pounds of making 205, actually 206 if you allow for the shorts.
Yeah.
At an official weigh-in, which was never really that big a deal, was never that big of a challenge for me.
Yeah, Randy, did you ever work with Mike Dolce?
You know, I trained with Mike up at Team Quest.
Yeah, I thought so, yeah.
He was a fighter and trained and had some of his early fights with us at Team Quest. But when he forayed into the nutrition side of fighting, I had already moved away to Vegas and was kind of doing my own thing.
On career reflection, before we just turn away a little bit, you know, with all your achievements in the UFC, what would you put down to your proudest moment?
Oh, man. I don't know. I've had some amazing moments in wrestling and obviously some fights that were a ton of fun and fan favorites.
Yeah, for sure.
I've got you know, three amazing kids that are doing very, very well, and certainly proud of them and the things that they're doing and the way they've carried themselves through life. I don't know. It's hard to identify one single thing. I think winning the Pan Am Games in Cuba was definitely a highlight for me in 1991. I was wrestling down in Havana and the Pan Am Championships, and Fidel Castro was in the stands, and I was competing against a Cuban whom I'd never beaten.
Jesus.
He was an Olympic silver medalist and world silver medalist, and that was the first and only time I beat him was in the match down there in front of Fidel, so it was a pretty good night.
What's up, guys? Be sure to pick up your free copy of Conversations with Champions. This is our free ebook, which is comprised of inspirational quotes from past guests that we've had on the show.
Get inspirational quotes from champions such as Evander Holyfield, Jonathan Thurston, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Larry Holmes, Mario Andretti, Anthony Mundine, Joe DeFranco, and many, many more.
To pick up your free copy now, just simply go to our website, www.divisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. Put your name and email in the slot. It takes about 10 seconds, and we'll send you the book directly to your inbox. Now back to the show.
Randy, in terms of how important is losing, like we spoke before, you know, you've got a son and he fights. You know, have you guys had a great chat about losing and how you handle and prosper from that?
Yeah, I think we try to keep it pretty realistic. You know, he knows losing is part of life. You're not going to be successful at everything. You can't be afraid to put yourself out there. And you can't let fear and other people's expectations set the frontier of your destiny, of what you're set out to achieve. And those setbacks, you know, those dark times, those sorrows, those are all part of life. You have to embrace that and get through it. That's where character's built. That's where resilience and what's really important in life is built, is in those times of struggle. No. So I think those losses are important. They made me a better athlete and, at the end of the day, a better human being. So I wouldn't change him. I certainly train my butt off to not lose, to win. But it's a fact of life. It's going to happen.
In terms of, you know, in Australia and I'm sure in America as well, that, you know, there's been a lot of studies at the moment into things like men's mental health and, you know, just issues surrounding with depressions and things like that. In terms of, I know you retired a couple of times from the UFC, but, you know, the second time around, or even the first time around, when you actually did pull the pin and decided not to fight again, given the stature of where you actually got to, did you struggle at all for your own identity once you stopped completely fighting?
It was a challenge. You know, the first time I retired, I was going through a divorce. It dragged on for 2 years. Probably the lowest I've felt as a human in my entire life. And I just didn't feel like myself. I didn't feel like I was training and competing the way I knew I was capable of. And I think that was what led me to step away for more than a year. When the dust settled and things came back around, I felt like I had more to accomplish and more to do, which is, you know, fortunately for me, I was able to get back in there and compete for a few more years. The second time I retired, I had to be honest with myself. I had to be rational and honest and evaluate where I was at physically and technically. Was I going to be the number one guy in my weight class? You know, was I going to be a world champion again? And I think the honest answer to that question was no, probably not. No. So then it's a function of, well, why am I grinding out another camp? Why am I putting my body in harm's way, you know, risking potential injury, one, you know, a joint injury, something like that may affect the quality of the rest of my life. And so I had acting and these other businesses and these other things that were going well that I really wanted to focus on, and just didn't feel like it made much sense to grind out another camp and fight it again just for a paycheck. It took me a while to come to terms with that and deal with those honest answers with myself. And then after hanging it up, there is something about being involved in an endeavor like that. That's the sole focus of your being and the center of your life. And then walking away from that there's a challenge there. I never really felt like I was depressed, but definitely, thankfully, had acting and this other stuff to really focus on and shift that competitiveness to challenge myself with, and I think that is a struggle for a lot of guys that walk away from their sport. I think we're seeing a similar struggle with a lot of guys that you know, leave the military, that leave the service. They have an infrastructure and a particular support and a mentality and commitment that goes into that. And when they leave the service for whatever reason, it's a big challenge for them to then kind of find their way back to a. I think we as athletes understand that. We share that.
Randy, were you big into anything like visualization or, you know, practices such as meditation or anything like that?
Absolutely. Visualization was a big tool and a big piece of the mental skills that we talked about before. Visualizing that fight throughout the entire training camp, just about every single day, I would see that fight. Would would see the outcome of that fight and all the potential ways that could go with that one common denominator. I always saw my hand being raised at the end of it.
All right, Randy, to wrap up the interview, I've just got a couple of personality questions. The first one is, and it kind of relates back to mental health and just getting a little bit of advice in that area. In terms of even now, when you have a bad day, we all have bad days. What are some of the little things that you like to turn to help you in that day?
I think you have to have those people you can lean on from time to time. I think that they're important, whether it's your significant other or a family member that's close to you, someone that knows you, you know, at your core, that you can lean on, that you can vent to, that's going to give you that ear that you can understand, someone that gives you that feeling where you know you're not alone. I think that's important. You know, we only need a few things as humans to live. Certainly, you know, food, water, and sleep. But I think love, and I would add to that the struggle. I think we need to struggle. If we live in a world where everything's handed to us and we're never challenged, then we're never really going to grow as people. So we all have struggles. Creating that network, those folks that you can trust with those things to help you get through them and get over them are important.
Yeah, in terms of, you know, definition of success, Randy, has it changed for you now that you're 54 compared to you even when you entered the UFC for the first time at 33?
I think success for me was just being true to myself, pursuing the passion that I had with diligence and honesty and, just trying to keep it simple. I don't think you can measure your success in achievements. I think you have to measure your success in who you are, how you treat people. And I think those are a lot more important things. And at the end of the day, you know, we'll be a lot more fulfilling.
Okay, a couple of lighthearted ones just to finish. Now, Randy, when you were growing up, what posters did you have on your bedroom wall?
Oh, I definitely had the Farrah Fawcett poster on my wall. In fact, that might have been the only one I had on my wall.
Good pick. All right, final question. Final question, Randy. You're going to be hosting a private dinner party. You've got 5 invites. Now, the only rules, no family or friends, but it can be anyone dead or alive. Who would you like to invite?
Well, I think you'd have to invite Jesus Christ to that dinner.
Yeah. Are you very spiritual, Randy?
No pun intended in the Last Supper or anything like that.
Are you a spiritual guy, Randy?
I'm spiritual. I'm not much for organized religion. Like, I don't really care to get into that. I don't think anybody cares about my opinion anyway. But I'm definitely a spiritual guy. I believe in a higher power. But that's probably about as far as I'll go with that. I don't know. Who else? There's so many interesting people out there. Both on both sides of that equation.
Who's your favorite poet?
Would have been cool to sit down with Ronald Reagan.
Oh, yeah.
Can't think of anybody else off the top of my head.
What about your favorite poet, Randy?
My favorite what?
Your favorite poet.
Oh, my favorite poet. Yeah. My favorite poet right now is he's actually alive and well and pretty active. I think he actually writes something every day, which is pretty remarkable. There's a guy named Tyler Knott Gregson. I think a lot of his poetry is interesting. He's a great wordsmith and does some amazing things with words and the poetry that he writes. Certainly, Walt Whitman would be up there. He was pretty pretty amazing.
Hey, Randy, is there anyone in terms of, you know, you're forging your acting career now and, you know, away from someone like Sly Stallone, is there someone that you secretly watch a lot of their work and you get inspired by?
I was always a huge Clint Eastwood fan.
Oh, wow.
And I've read some of his autobiography stuff, and even as a kid, the spaghetti westerns, The Good, the Bad, the Ugly, Outlaw Josie Wales, one of my favorite movies, Pale Rider. I mean, he just had a ton of those interesting movies. And I think the thing I liked about him was almost more important, the things he didn't say when you were watching him perform, more than anything that he said.
He's in one of the Expendables too, isn't he?
No, he's never not been in an Expendable yet.
Oh, they're going to get him in.
So, but I've always been a huge Eastwood fan.
All right, I really appreciate you stopping by today, Randy. Before I let you go, everyone check out Randy's website. He's at www.extremecouturemma.com. He's very active on his Twitter as well. He's at Randy_Couture. Randy, I really appreciate you sharing your wisdom and all your stories today. It's been a bucket list item of mine. I've been a big fan since I was growing up. So I really appreciate you taking a bit of time today, bud.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Johnny, Randy Couture, brother.
That was awesome, man. Before we continue this, I want to say great job, Tristan. Man, you got some good points and got some good... Look, Randy's a world champion fighter. He's an introverted poet. He's an actor. So having this guy on, we got to see so many different levels of how he thinks.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the easiest of interviews either. Like when,
yeah, especially with someone like him, because he's been interviewed so much. I'm sure that it's hard for him to be excited for every single question, do you mean? But he gave me so much, and I really appreciate that from Randy, because, you know, I did take a lot of time to actually research him. Like, I was kind of put on
you
the spot.
You always do that, though.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's
when we got the notice.
Yeah, like, Randy is just, I didn't realize, like, that arty side of him, do you know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things that it might take you 30 years to find it.
Mm.
Just never give up, do you know what I mean?
So, I was the question you asked in reference to me about working in Las Vegas, guys. So I was working on Las Vegas Boulevard right across from the Cosmo Hotel in Planet Hollywood at a fine dining steakhouse called the Strip House, which is still there. I highly recommend it. It's amazing. But every time they would do movie premieres, they would do the movie premiere red carpet event at the bar I worked at. So this bar, we would sell like bottles of wine for thousands of dollars. The steaks were over $100. It was high end. I've waited on like Ben Affleck.
What steaks are these, man?
Oh, dude, bone-in ribeyes, dry rub Delmonico's, the highest level of fillets. Dude, I'm talking bomb, right?
Yeah.
And we had private rooms. So like I've waited on Affleck, Matt Damon, Cedric the Entertainer, et cetera, et cetera. I'll never forget when they did the Expendables. I wasn't sure. It would have been in 5 years ago, so maybe the first or second one. But all the cast came in, and you saw, Sly was in there, Schwarzenegger would come in. But Couture was the only one that you wouldn't be able to recognize as part of their group, even though he was in that group. He's wearing a baseball cap forward. He's really, he had a scarf on, like a sweater on, with just blue jeans and flip-flops. He walks, now this is like a Thai place. He's just wearing blue jeans and flip-flops. He sits at a high table, a high top, which is only for two, right when you walk in, by himself. He orders, I think, a glass of red wine. Very kind, and people actually had, everybody else was walking through, dude, there's Sly, there's Arnold. People had to go up, yo, man, that's Couture right there.
Wow.
And he's by himself. He didn't want any extra attention, and he didn't take part in the melee. He didn't want, some people love the circus. Like Jennifer Lopez, they did this movie premiere. She loves it. She's great.
Oh, that ass.
She loves the circus. Couture, he's been in the bright lights. He won the Pan Am Games, like you guys mentioned, in front of Fidel Castro, UFC champ six times over, movie star. Still, what I learned from just waiting on him and then hearing your interview with him, that's not who he is. It's not why he does the game.
I agree. Yeah.
And man,
there's a bigger purpose. Like, his own fulfillment is just the achievement, not
with other people
telling him that he's the best, you know what I mean, or trying to get his autograph. That's just part of the actual job. Like, he enjoys doing that, but at the same time,
he's developing.
Yeah, I love it.
So at 23 he did this, at 33 he did this, at 54 he's done that. And then the question about when you guys were touching base on
Ryan.
Writing a
How about the music aspect?
Yeah.
He was getting involved with a country musician.
That's fantastic that he thinks outside the box. Like, you know, that age is their number. Like, in terms of, he's just rewriting the script, isn't he?
Just setting a different tone, because I come from a place where, like, my father died young in his mid-50s. My grandfather died in his late 50s. Men in certain parts of the world, you know, we die before our wives, yeah. The women. And I used to have an approach to life, like, I used to live my life with stresses of a timeline. Oh, if I don't do this by this age, and I haven't done this by this age, and if by the time I'm 50, shit, I might as well just cash it all in. And then you hear a guy like Randy tell his story. Then you hear Steve Maxwell and Frank Zane, all these other gentlemen that we've had the privilege of interviewing. That's having a huge effect on me in terms of, like, guys I look up to.
Yeah.
Anybody could be a 22-year-old all-star in a sport. But what are you doing at 50? What are you doing at 60? Are you still progressing? Do you still want to develop yourself? Man, that's inspirational.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just great, the fact that he can still be wanting to achieve. Because he could easily hang it up and say, I've achieved it all. Do you know what I mean? And he has. But the fact that he's just so driven towards achieving so much now in his acting career, it's just something that's really inspiring me. And I think we're going to see more from Randy away from action.
For sure. I like that. Yeah, he would be good. So I watched a Rocco this weekend, or this past week, romantic comedy.
They're good. I like watching them. They make me relax.
Our boy Boss was in it. I wish I would have known that. Have you seen Here Comes the Boom?
No, I haven't.
Terrible script. Awful script.
But it makes you laugh, I'm sure. Yeah.
But Boss, he starred in that. And we've interviewed Boss on the show. And I wish I would have seen this movie before I interviewed him. I thought he was just a spot role. But he was starring in it.
Sense of humor.
Sense of humor. Charisma.
Yeah.
And with Randy, it was like all of that he could act. But I'd like to read some of his work. Like, he said he finally wrote some prose.
And
he talked about his one of his he looked up to Walt Whitman, great American writer. And seeing that side of a fighter, you know, people are like, oh, he's a fighter.
I think that's where the fighters can actually start developing more, and I think people would really appreciate it more. Excuse me, with UFC fighters and in boxers as well. Some of them are so guarded on their career right now that they don't open up the way that Randy does. I think people would really enjoy getting to hear about things that they do outside the ring. Like, that's what interests me more with Randy, away from his fighting.
Yeah, but he's retired though. I mean, we've interviewed
him, and that's a kind of running thing, that a trend that we both have seen, the fact that guys that are still competing are very guarded against saying, oh, well, I was scared of this guy and I really looked up to this guy, but then I had to fight him.
Yeah.
And I like poetry and I like going out with my girlfriend and watching romantic comedies.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of them don't do that.
That's a good question. I mean, we've had Matt Brown, Carlos Condit, I mean, Stipe, the list goes on, Algeri. It's tough though. I'd like to, and then the retired guys, you know.
That's why I love the retired guys. Shamrock,
me too.
Yeah.
I think we agree on that, like, all you active fighters out there, stop emailing us to come on the show. We like you when you're retired.
I'll retire.
Once you retire, you can come back on. But it's just the mindset. Could you imagine if you were in the middle of your combat career? It'd be tough for you to think about anything other than savagery. You know what I mean?
It's true.
Let alone...
That's why I like what Chris is doing, because he's got more bows than just being a fighter.
Dude. Coxman for sure. Yeah, the shoulder game on point. Man crush. The Algeri, man. He's been getting brought up a lot lately.
Yeah. Well, he's just relevant, man. I think he's just relevant. Doing so many things.
Be relevant, guys.
For sure. All right. It's another great episode.
Yeah, man. Dude, Kotor, we've been trying to hunt him down for a long time.
Yeah, we've got some other great ones coming up. You know, we had Cal Fussman that we recorded with today, which was just brilliant.
If he had a nickname, what would you call Cal Fussman?
Ooh, if he had a nickname, he's just a storyteller, man.
Yeah, something with story, the historian or something. Like, this guy, the art of boxing. The guy was just – I can't wait to release that episode.
Yeah, man. But stay tuned, guys. We've got some major episodes coming up. Dom at D'Agostino will be recording next week with. And also Aaron McKenzie. So it's going to be Olympian. Some great episodes. If you don't know who Aaron is, please Google her, because you should find out. We had Brian, her husband, on a couple of weeks ago. Mm. Aaron is equal, if not more impressive than what Brian's done. He's like,
Brian's not amazing, a two-time Olympian.
Amazing couple.
Brian's not a two-time Olympian.
No, he's not.
Aaron is.
Not Olympian. Gold medalist.
Yes. Ooh. Gold medalist, guys. Get ready. TVBP in the house.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Johnny, great episode. Before we leave, social media.
Guys, follow me. I'm really active right now. Facebook, Johnny Stavko, all other social medias. You can find me there. How about you, Tristan?
I'm the same. I'm not the same, actually. I'm not Johnny Stavko.
Yeah, you are the same, baby.
Tristan Cannell. So please search us if you want to get in touch with us. info@thevisionboardpodcast.com. We'd love to hear from you. Tag us in any posts on social media, and we'll get straight back to you.
Yeah, guys. Have a good one.
All right. We'll check you next week.
Peace.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working hard at it. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.